Natural History of Perth.
Founded in 1829, population more than 300,000.
It was 93 in the shade, but that's nothing unusual for Perth.
The West Australian younger set can frisk all day in sun or shade. But hurry home or you'll be late. Your breakfast's ready in the sun. Your fruit is waiting on the plate.
Jeff Hutcherson on ABC Radio Perth.
Now, today on the Unofficial History of Perth, your memories of the Swan River. Swimming in it, sailing, boating and water skiing atop it or diving deep within it. In a moment, Dr. Julian Bolitar will tell us some stories of an ancient past and its present role as our city's symbolic front garden. And I want you to tell me what the river has meant to you, your memories, the funny moments. Learning to swim, the jellyfish stings, the sunburnt legs, fishing for cobbler and flathead, the glowing eyes of prawns at night. We've had such a strong response on our Facebook page. A few years ago, Dr. Julian Bolitar, landscape architect, urban designer, and academic, decided to tell the history of this river. The book is Take Me to the River, The Story of Perth's Foreshore. Julian, good afternoon to you.
Hi there.
Very nice to have you here. How old is this waterway, Julian?
Well, as I understand it, 60 million years old. It doesn't look that old. It's this muddy, meandering kind of river. It's not a mighty river in that sense. So it doesn't really reveal how old it is until you go down to the edge of the continental shelf, 5 kilometres northwest of Rottnest. And the river is so old, it's carved a canyon in the edge of the continental shelf, bigger than the Grand Canyon. It is a truly ancient river, but it's fairly modest about it.
How have we tried to shape it?
Well, really, in the very early days of the colonies, James Stirling, the governor, he had this vision that Fremantle would be the industrial port, Guildford would be the agricultural centre, and Perth would be the administrative centre. He laid out a giant park, which emanated, pushed southwards from St George's Terrace, why that was called a terrace, which would be a big romantic parkland, a bit like Governor's House Gardens, overlooking the water. In typical Perth fashion, what happened was he went on holiday and his surveyor, Septimus Rowe, divided it up and flogged it off for real estate. He came back and his park had been effectively carved up and he was very upset. So then really that set in motion a whole kind of comedy of errors where then later in the early part of the 20th century, we start reclaiming the river to try and as a kind of unconscious impulse to recreate this lost park buried under the city. And we do that for recreation in the early 20th century. Then we fill in Mounts Bay to produce the freeway interchange in the 1960s. So it's very much a mode of dominance over the river. We try and reshape the river to our need.
Julian, why have we not genuinely celebrated Noongar culture by the Swan?
I think it's an uncomfortable history. But it's interesting how that's tied to the Swan River. And when we look at the series of proposals for the Swan River, there's been at least 7 proposals for Indigenous cultural centres. First, one as part of the brewery redevelopment at the north and south end of Harrison Island in Belmont, at Elizabeth Quay in both the Carpenter government and Colin Barnett government stages. But we don't seem to be very good at delivering them. But it is apparent that somewhere there, we see, or European Australian culture sees the river as the appropriate site to make reparations for this history of imprisonment and murder and curfews and the like and discrimination.
What was your first experience on the Swan River?
Look, probably sailing at Maylands and having jellyfish fights on windless days and 2 flying ants, which are, you know, small boats, and picking jellyfish and throwing it at the opposition. But then cobblering and prawning down at Maylands and getting a lot of prawns, getting the odd house brick, you know, but the river being full of life, which is, I don't see people prawning down there. I haven't got down there with a net for a long time, but I believe the age that I was experiencing in my youth is something which is slipping past us now.
Thank you so much for coming in. That's a lovely, evocative introduction to the topic. Julian Bolitar is the author of Take Me to the River. Hi, Kate. What is the Swan River to you?
It's the start of my life, the meaning of my life and the future for me.
Tell me.
Yeah, I have a very strong connection. I have my family that goes back about 4 generations that lived in Guildford and grew up around that area. So I have that connection. I was born by the river and I grew up in Bassendean, over the road from the river, so many hours, days, holidays spent down there.
What did you like about it as a kid, Kate?
It was free. It was just freedom. Yeah, I'm in my 50s now, so, you know, that was everything. We just would get on our bikes, go down the river, go play on the train tracks. You know, it was just freedom for us.
Where did you learn to swim, Kate?
I learned to swim at the Point Reserve in Bassendean in the 70s when they used to still have swimming lessons in the river.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have told us stories, and on our Facebook page, lots of people have talked about the swimming at the Crawley Baths, known as Jellyfish Central, prawning, and every single weekend at the Netherlands Yacht Club while Dad sailed his C-class catamaran and the Tornadoes. Very happy memories and a great lifestyle growing up. Are you going to stay there forever, Kate?
Well, interesting you say that, because I've recently built my home, my new home in Bassendean, once again over the road from the Point Reserve in the Bassendean area. I've got children, and I want my children to have the same lifestyle and opportunities to access the river that I had. And yeah, it's a big, big part of my life. And as I said, I grew up in Bassendean, and when Mum passed away a few years ago, her ashes were sprinkled in the river, and that's where I hope to end up as well when I pass on. So, yeah, it's everything for me.
Kate, thank you so much. What a beautiful sentiment. Jeff, watching the participants of the Avon Descent pass by, ticking off their name in the program. Swimming at Whiteman's Bridge, Middle Swan, would ride our bikes out and jump off the bridge. It was great fun. Trish, summer nights on the boat, leaning over and making phosphorescent swirls. This is Graham. Good afternoon, Graham.
Hi, Jeff. Of a metal jug, well, the remains of a metal jug, which is like a coffee pot, it was explained to me.
Yes.
That I found in 1948, a couple of hundred metres from the Mosman Park jetty. I think in those days it was called Mon Repos, that sort of steep, sandy hill area.
Yes.
And there must have been a very low tide, because there was this thing in the water, so I picked it up, covered in squiggles and what I'd call hieroglyphics, but I know they're not. So I took it to the museum, and the man there took a rubbing of it and sent it away for examination, and about 3 months later, he got in touch and said that it's an Islamic coffee pot. The lid and the hinge have rusted or corroded off, and it dated back to about the 1600s. And I thought, well, blow the museum. I'll keep it for a while. When I did take it back in the early 60s, the different person said, oh, you picked that up off the tip at Leighton. And I said, I didn't know there was a tip at Leighton. What are you talking about? Anyway, I didn't like his attitude, so I brought it home and I've still got it.
Graham, thank you. Anthony, hello.
Hello.
What have you got for us? What's interesting to you about the Swan River, Anthony?
What's very interesting to me is the paddle steamers.
Yes.
And what we can say is with the present tense, because there's still one moored up at Men Street Jetty at the moment, so that's the decoy. And I do a little bit of summer work on the decoy. We present some history tours, and we can pretty much almost replicate an incident from 1906 with the decoy. So not a lot of people know it, but it was a floating cinema.
Oh, fantastic, Anthony.
So in order to pick up more trade, the decoy had a great rivalry with the Westralian. So they were both party boat paddle steamers. They'd take people down to open-air concerts down near Canning Bridge on the weekend.
Yes.
And the Westralian was a little bit faster, so it always got more business because you get in quick to the good seats. So in order to steal some of that business, the decoy operators got their hands on a biograph projector, so a very, very early form of cinema projector, almost like a slideshow projector.
Yes.
And they hung a sheet across the bow, and you could kick back and float through the narrows, no bridge then, and watch the moving pictures up on the screen on the decoy.
What years are we talking about, Anthony?
This is 1906.
1906.
So very rudimentary cinema, more still images. And in order to take away that extra business, the Westralia would get ahead in the channel because they were faster off the dock, and they'd send one of their deckhands out the back with a flashlight, and he would wreak havoc with the screen and ruin the pictures for everyone on the decoy.
That is a great story, Anthony. Thank you. This is Hugo. Hugo, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. What have you got for us?
Well, I've got a bit of an interesting story. I think a lot of people would sort of be unaware that something like the Swan River would have any real shark-related stories with it, but it was certainly something that I became aware of when I joined the boat club at Scotch College back in 1989.
Yes.
As a young kid, that was one of the very first stories that you get told when you join the club, that one of the Scotch College boys was taken by a shark. And you sort of roll your eyes a little bit and sort of think, well, that can't possibly be true because you never see them in the river. But sure enough, back in, I think, the 1920s or 1930s, there was a young boy, I think about 13, who was swimming right off the Scotch College boat shed. And he got taken by a shark and was killed. Now, the reason why that's significant is a little bit later on in my rowing career, once I got to the senior level, and we're rowing back from our races on a Saturday afternoon, it would be quite common for crews to suffer getting swamped by Rottnest ferries and so on.
Yes.
And I think it shows a lot about the approach towards equipment, because all the oars and the boats were secured and towed back to the sheds to safety, while the boys were left to tread water in the middle of the river and no doubt sort of looking around, sort of thinking what's around there. And the thing is when you are rowing, certainly early in the morning, if you happen to be looking out the boat, quite often you will see a fin, and part of you will think it's a shark, but it's quite often it's just a dolphin that's decided to swim along as well.
Mary says kids still jump off Barker's Bridge into the Swan River in Guildford, and I hope they always will do. Mike says some years ago at 2 a.m. I caught an 8.5-foot bull shark underneath the Narrows Bridge.